Good morning, everybody. Can you hear me okay? Okay. So, a lot of you already know this, but in case you don't know me, I have the opportunity to work as an interfaith chaplain at the University of Minnesota Medical Center. And I always joke and say I work in a meteor shower. That's what I call it. But last couple of weeks, it was especially a lot going on. There were four deaths connected to work. And where I work is the rehabilitation part. So we don't have that many. I mean, they're happening everywhere, as Sosan kindly reminded us already this morning. But they don't happen that much on my unit. So someone who was working their way through an amputation suddenly died in the middle of the night. Nobody seemed to know exactly what happened. So that was shocking. It wasn't like they were a bone marrow transplant patient who was trying to get stronger. I mean, no. So that was a shock. Then a patient who I'd been taking care of, who was known to me outside as a Buddhist practitioner, died at home. And a colleague who'd been ill and was expected to return to work in June suddenly, in a sense, died. And a hospice patient, I don't usually do this, but she wanted to talk about detachment. She was dying of ALS. This just like beautiful being. And I was brought in to help with her understanding. So she died, and I attended two funerals this week. And then, just to go along with it, I had a number of what I call, you know, they call a little death in the Catholic tradition. So I had a number of false identities cracking off at the same time. I don't say this is good or bad or special, but it is rocking and rolling. It's a lot. It's really a lot. And so a question I ask myself a lot is, where is there rest? Where is this true rest in the middle of everything? That's not, you know, like phony baloney, but really, really, where is it? So when I talk about rocking and rolling, I kind of mean it literally. So within and throughout these experiences of loss, there's a kind of disorientation. Even though we know we're all going to die, it's still disorienting. And there's a kind of pulse in it. So when my body and mind are allowed to rock with the rhythms and the storms, what happens when I allow that? So each moment of contact with the waves opens a Dharma gate. That sounds sensible, but it's not so easy to stay in contact, I would say. So I've been doing this movement improvisation practice, and it's a spiritual practice called Interplay, for about 10 years. And some of you know me that I have. I was a dancer with Judith Bjorkgren when we were young. Right. So Interplay offers a set of seemingly simple movement structures that one is directed to improvise with as structures. In that mindful attending, gates open. So in that practice, I've had enlightenment experiences. In that practice. And also, rest is known. One of the basic sets of structures are these five rhythms. Swinging, thrusting, hanging, shaping, and stillness. So as the mind, meaning thoughts, and the mind, meaning physical sensations and kinesthetic tones, shifting kinesthetic tones, responds and swings from feeling to feeling. For instance, for me in the last few weeks, such as surprise, shock, or grief, heaviness, sadness, disorientation, we bring awareness to the actual swinging that our bodies can do. The Dharma gate swings open wide, and our view, our relationship with such feelings opens naturally. So I want to bring in Shitu's poem, The Song of the Grassroot Hermitage, here. I have a long relationship with this chant because in 2002, I had the opportunity to do 3 months of silent practice in a cabin in the woods in the winter, and I chanted this every morning. So just to say why I'm bringing it up. So Shitu, which I'll tell you who he is in a minute, he said, "Thus this mountain monk doesn't understand at all. Living here, she no longer works to get free." She no longer works to get free. That's very appealing. So swinging relates to the ebb and flow of our weight in gravity, and it's collaborative. It's not working at something. So we can bring awareness to the thrust of the emotional chemicals that are responding to the conditions. That's natural, right? They happen. We can bring the shape of words and ritual and repetition to the swirling impermanence that has caught our attention, which we tend to ignore until it does catch our attention. And the last movement quality I want to mention is hanging, which is actually my favorite. And I want to focus on that this morning because hanging and zazen are first cousins. In fact, in the chant, the Song of the Grassroot Hermitage, she too describes the practice of hanging and the powerful fruit of hanging. So just for a second, so that you have a physical sense. So if you were a beautiful bird hanging on the wind, could you try it? Just physically try it, even if you feel weird. Just pretend, yeah, and breathe. Just like what is that like to just hang in space? A bell hanging. Thank you for being brave and willing. I just wanted you to get a feel for it. So this is one way the quality of hanging is described. Random, boundless, gyrotational, connecting, falling up and down, gliding and resting in space. Right? So when we sit zazen, you might not know this, but when we sit zazen, we rest in a particular area of the sensory motor loop or the perceptive loop that's organized in our brain, and it's called the premotor focus. So that's what we're doing. We're just hanging there. We continuously return to this place before we concretize and take an action. Right? And it's hard because we keep doing that, but then we keep coming back. Right? So this allows us to hang in awareness before, just before. Last week at work, we have residents who are training to be chaplains, and their teacher wanted to teach them about integrative practices. And so she had me come in because she didn't want them to fall asleep, she had me come in and do a voice healing with one of them. And so they were all in a circle around us, and I said, in order to participate, imagine you're in the place just before prayer, and just hold that space. Then we did the voice healing in front of it. So she too writes, the person in the hut, that's us, lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between, not stuck. I don't know if you ever find yourselves a little bit stuck. I do. Like every other moment, in a way, stuck. So this movement of hanging is unstuck. Unstuck. So we're not stuck. We're at one with the flow of the and the energy field, and it doesn't have a direction. This is not how we were trained in school. You should have a direction, you should have a plan, and you should. I mean, that's a good thing. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm not a hippie. But actually, we don't, even though we should. So hanging has a moving center of gravity, and it's slow, just like Sishin. So when we hang in Zazen without doing anything, karma tends to unravel its knots and show itself to us. So what I'd like to do now is for you to take your chant book, and it's on page
11.
And let's see, I'm going to make up what I'm going to do. Let's chant this. And we're going to chant it kind of like this. I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value after eating, like that way. Okay? So I'll just use my little bell to help us. Song of the grass roof hermitage. I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. After eating, I relax, enjoy a nap. None it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived, covered by weeds. The person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between places worldly people live. He doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, she doesn't love. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. Intense square, an ancient one, illumines form and their nature. A great vehicle, bodhisattva trusts without doubt. The middling or lowly can't help wondering, will this hut perish or not? Perishable or not, the original master is present, not dwelling south or north, east or west, firmly based on steadiness, it can't be surpassed. A shining window below the green pines, jade palaces or vermilion towers can't compare with it. Just sitting with head covered, all things are at rest. Thus this mountain monk doesn't understand at all. Living here, she no longer works to get free. Who would proudly arrange seats trying to entice guests? Turn the light to shine within and just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Meet the ancestral teachers, be familiar with their instruction. Bind grasses to build a hut and don't give up. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations are only free you from obstructions. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag here and now. So this chant comes to us from Shi Tu Shi Qian, who is said to have lived from 700 to 790 CE. And he also wrote the famous Sandokai, or Harmony of Difference and Sameness, that we chant. So the translation of his name means above the rock, rare transformation. And one place I read said, he built himself a little hut on an outcropping of rock on the mountain outside of the monastery where he also taught. So he had a refuge to go to. And what he offers us in this poem is a Zen of no accomplishment and great-hearted inclusion of the entire world in 10 feet square. No grasping after understanding, and no relax, and just relaxation, deep relaxation, deep relaxation. So I told you that I was in this hut. Well, it was a cabin, but it wasn't very fancy. And every day I sat about 6 or 7 hours. I chanted this. I chopped wood. Literally, I chopped wood. And I made fire. And I was hanging. I was hanging in the sensory motor loop. And it was like dancing, a fully embodied dance in which karma could unwind. And it did. It did. So probably when you chant, maybe you notice that certain words or phrases kind of, for some reason, kind of like, oh, that's kind of interesting, or what's that? Or actually it stirs something inside. So maybe just now when you chanted it, there was just some word where you was like, ooh, 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 or ooh, you know, one of those kind of things. And so that winter, of course, I was chanting that this every day. And some of the phrases that grabbed me were, an ancient one illumines forms and their nature. Turn the light to shine within, then just return. And let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. So let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. So one morning, as I chanted these lines, the lines I just said, something happened. Something happened. In my heart, something happened. It unfolded. And certain patterns and deeply conditioned self-identities began to wobble, began to loosen up, began to be ventilated. Tears poured down my face. I kind of experienced what I call a BFO, a blinding flash of the obvious. We call that enlightenment. That it was even possible for that conditioning not to grip my life so tightly, that it's actually okay to let go. So this was a moment of hope brought forth by hanging, exactly as Shi Tu expressed in his poem. Let go of hundreds and thousands of years. Open your hands and walk innocent. Wow. What is that? On another evening in the sacred bathtub, and in order to have a sacred bath, I had to boil water in a dye pot on the stove while I'd fill it up, and then I'd sit a couple of sittings while the water was heating up. Then when I was done for the evening, I poured it in the bathtub so I could have some warm water. Okay, so since I was chanting this every day, The lovely rhythm of this translation that Kaz Ta-Nehisi and Tygen Dan Leighton made of the translation of this poem started rocking and rolling. You know how it goes. So, turn the light to shine within, then just return. There's like a rhythm there, yeah? And it started to turn into a tune, which we're going to, well, sing in a minute. And and this other one, thank you, an ancient one illumines forms and their nature. That also turned into a tune, which I started singing to myself in the bathtub. So before we do that, I'd like to hear what jumped out at you this morning when we chanted it. Any word? Anything?
Jade palaces or vermilion towers can't compare with it.
Okay, so what Sosan said, the one that jumped at her was, jade palaces or vermilion towers can't compare with it. That jumped out at her. What do you remember if you had a thought or a feeling, or it just jumped? It just jumped.
Well, a shining window below the green pines, jade palaces and vermilion towers can't compare with it. I pictured that visual. I think it's very descriptive. So that was my thought.
Uh-huh. You saw it. Yeah. Kathleen.
This was kind of odd, but it seems to be a statement where I'm at. Meet the ancestral teachers, but be familiar with their, and I read that as obstruction. Which really is my obstruction. That's kind of how it came down. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But I like instruction, too.
Yeah. Both work very well, actually. Yeah.
The first line, I've built a grass hut where there's nothing to value. That speaks to me because my profession is where I'm playing. And maybe that's why, but I think so often what is of value, it comes from the community. And where something appears to have no value, there actually is.
Oh, wow. Yeah. This is rich. Yeah.
Just sitting in the head covered, and the image that came was a hoodie. Second thought was, oh, that's really practical. That'll keep the mosquitoes.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
Fresh weeds appeared.
Oh.
So when it was completed, and all of the grist for the mill, if you will, it's continual. Things just continually come up. There's fresh weeds constantly to work with.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Anyone else? Seamus.
One other visual. Upon hearing let go of hundreds of years and relax completely, I pictured this is going to sound really gross, but I pictured all my thoughts represented by stuff in my head and then just tearing them out and they're dangling above my head momentarily.
Wow. How was that?
It was hanging.
A couple of summers ago, I went to Pema Ozel. It's a Tibetan retreat center. I went there to study, to do voice training, playing. But I went in the morning to sit in their hall, and everything that was in your head is painted on all the walls. Yeah, it was oh my God. Yeah, so if you go to a Tibetan place to train, you can see all of samsara and, you know, constructions are just not hidden, just everywhere. So would you like to sing? Oh, did you want to say one more?
Yeah, this one's really good, to bind grasses to build a hut and don't give up.
Oh, yeah.
Don't give up.
Yeah. Over and over and over and over and over, right? Yeah. Weeds and weeds. And don't give up. Yeah. Do you know, oh darn, what was her name? She was like 95. She learned to do calligraphy. She was a Zen teacher in Japan, a woman. She learned to do calligraphy when she was 93. And one of the things she wrote was don't give up. And I have a picture of her on my altar at home, and I can't remember her name right now. But she was wonderful. Don't give up. So how about turn the light to shine within, then just return. Turn the light to shine within, then just return. Turn the light to shine within, then just return. Turn the light to shine within, then just return. Turn the light to shine within, then just return. Turn the light to shine within, then just return. So that was one. I don't know if I'm going to be able to sing the other one. An ancient one illumines forms and their nature. 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 So this is completely illegal in like strict Zen practice. One time I sat, Dosho was there too. We went to Whidbey Island and we sat with Harada Roshi, this like Rinzai teacher. And we chanted the Heart Sutra at meals when we sat at tables. And there were, it was very, you know, and so we were chanting the Heart Sutra and I could hear the overtones. And so, like, just like this, I just couldn't help myself. I started playing because I could hear it. I just started, Harada Roshi said, "One note, only one note." And I was like, like, I didn't even know how he could hear me because I was, you know how you can put yourself inside a big sound and all. I was like, oh boy. And I knew Dosha was going, I know who that was. So, but even though it's illegal, we should do it anyway. It's intimate. So, I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. After eating, I relax and enjoy a nap. So, one of the gifts is permission to enjoy a nap. We can wake up to rest. I really enjoy naps now. Whenever I get a chance. I didn't ever before. Yes.
During session, we now have a nap. It's included in the schedule. It's short, but it's there.
Yeah.
It's not optional. It's part of the schedule.
So that's good, because hanging is napping, and so it's hard for us not to accomplish something. You know, on Fridays, like if I don't have to work on the weekend, on Friday after 5, I'm like, oh, you know, I'll get to finally fold the laundry, you know. But then on Saturday, I wake up and in my head is, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, da 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 da, and this and that, and oh, and that window's broken, and the lock on the front door is not working. And you know, do you know that? Like, it's really hard to nap. It's really hard for me to do that. So here's a story, a koan. Once upon a time, there was a disciple who was bragging about his master to the disciple of another master. He claimed that his teacher was capable of all sorts of magical acts, like writing in the air with a brush and having the characters appear on a piece of paper hundreds of feet away. Wow. And what can your master do? He asked the other disciple. My master can also perform amazing feats, the other student replies. When he's tired, he sleeps. When hungry, he eats. No. That sounds like, what? Is that one of those Zen jokes? But it isn't. Like, I don't know if any of you find yourselves at work eating lunch in front of your computer, if you have one, when you know it's probably better for you not to do that. So, I have a lot of magic tricks, but I still have to learn. When tired, no. We are tired. When hungry, no, we are hungry. Take care of this life. That's enough magic. That's pretty advanced. As we say in Interplay, that's a very advanced practice. So this is true rest. Simply taking care of this life. Noticing we are tired. We are hungry. This moment is complete. The next one, too. It has no special magic that makes it so. It simply is like this. It's kind of boring. Zen is kind of boring. Isn't that great? I think it's great. So all of my study and practice are for this. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations. So I study. I wonder, all of that is for what? Are only to free you from obstruction, Shi Tu says. If we want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag here and now the one who needs a nap, the one who is hungry, the one needs. There's a lot of bathroom jokes in Zen. I'm not going to tell those stories, but you know, just take care of human life. So Cynthia Winton Henry, who is the creator of Interplay, she's a minister, actually, a UCC minister in San Francisco. She asked this question. What if life didn't have to be so hard? That's like a little koan she throws out. So I think this is the same as my question. Where is there rest for me in all of this? So I'm going to end with a poem by David White. It's called All My Body Calls. All my body calls for something in this sleeping earth we call the spirit. But how from lifted arms where stars run through fingers and the night is like sand do I breathe a fragrance of its wisdom? Do I call its name or listen to the drops that trickle down to earth and hear life being given, not only through the moving hands of the forest, but through the hand that reaches in the dark, unmoving regions of the chest and uncovers slowly the enormous, indistinct shape of the ocean. I'd love to hear what you have to say. Yeah.
I had insomnia last night, and so I was up for a few hours, not able to get to sleep. I picked up a book on my bed table that I just found on the shelf. Actually, I found it, so someone's about to throw it out. Give it away. The Writing Life by Annie Dillard.
Oh, yeah.
And it, and so I started reading that, and I find it interesting, the Song of the Grassroot Hermitage in your talk, because a lot of what she's writing about is kind of the hermit's idea of being a writer, or how you do your work, and thinking in those terms, because she goes off to places by herself, and she writes about various places that she goes off to and how she practices it, and writes in this wonderful, vivid language about the process of creating. But this got me thinking about, beyond being a writer, about the idea of how you can bring that hermit's idea, like is spoken of here, in whatever your profession is, whatever you are doing, that you can bring that into your work, being just like a monk in the hermitage sort of thing. Does that make sense? And I'm wondering if you could comment on that a little bit, or if you can think of any.
I just think maybe it's what we all do, you know? Wherever we are all day and everything's going on, and you know, I ask myself, you know, remember, come back. What are we really doing here? Come back, little Sheba. Is that okay?
Sure.
I mean, really, that's all I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
What did you say to the person who wanted to know about detachment?
Oh, I told her she had an idea that detachment meant cutting off.
It was what?
Cutting off. Is this working? Mm-hmm. Cutting off. It meant cutting off. I told her it meant unobstructed love. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that okay?